Welcome to Gun Talk Nation. This week, we are brought to you by Crimson Trace and also Springfield Armory. Also, ATN Optics, the future of optics. ATN, you guys know them, thermal, night vision, and smart HD, which is really changing the game and what you used to think of as far as night vision and thermal and what can be done there. Recording video, sending Wi-Fi signals to your phone or your iPad. A lot of cool features built into these products. They actually have a sale going on right now where you get a free gift when you buy the Binox or the 4K Thor and some of the other products. So check them out at atncorp.com, ATN Optics. We appreciate their support. All right, this week on Gun Talk Nation, we've got our buddy Chris Serino with us. Chris has been filming with us, working with us for a long time. And Chris, you got a background in training people. You got a background in law enforcement. And specifically what I thought we'd jump into today is first-person defender, because that's why you're down here filming with us.
That's right.
Yeah.
I love being part of that program.
So just the backstory on first-person defender, how this came to be. Because first-person defender, if you have not seen it, it is a show that we take a different good guy in each episode. We put them into a self-defense scenario using force on force, which is basically a paintball that law enforcement and military use to train with, so you can actually shoot at each other safely. And we see how they do. We give them some training up, and then we run through another scenario and see how they improve. It's one of the most popular things we do on YouTube, and it really came, Chris, it really came from, we wanted to do something specific to self-defense. This was probably 9 years ago. And there were a couple self-defense shows. Tom, my dad, had developed PDTV, which was kind of one of the first self-defense shows out there. But we didn't want to just stay on the range and do drills all day. Mm-hmm. So what could be more interesting? Well, let's put regular people into, as real as we can make it, self-defense scenarios using force and force. And you've done a bunch of training with, obviously on this show, but obviously in your other world stuff.
Yeah, I've been doing training for a lot of years. Actually, I've been a trainer. A lot of people know me from Top Shot in the industry, and I get a lot of that. You know, but honestly, I get more people to talk to me about first-person defender than anything else that I do. And haven't been a trainer for so long and haven't done a lot of force on force, even with the air marshals, my time with them, we did a lot. I've recognized the value of force on force training. And the way I describe first person defender is I tell people that we take ordinary people and we put them in extraordinary situations. We see how they react. Then we give them some training, and then we put them through another extraordinary situation, and they usually perform a little bit better with just that small amount of training.
Yeah, and that's the funny part. So we're filming, we did four episodes this week so far, and we're filming some other extra stuff today. But when people watch the show, what they don't know is how quickly this stuff goes by, and we don't really have the time to spend days training these people up. So it really is pretty much real time of what they're seeing on the show. I mean, the training that you give them is maybe it's 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, there's a very small amount that we can do. A lot of people will never realize how much downtime there is behind the camera, just setting stuff up, getting things set up, because we got to catch the angles and we got to do all that stuff in order to paint the best picture for the viewer.
Yeah, kind of explain what's happening.
to make it interesting. It takes a lot of work.
Yes, yes. I had a conversation with somebody about the video production a while back, and they're like, well, you know, why does it take so much time? I'm like, well, it doesn't have to take time, but if you want it to look good and sound good, it takes time.
Yeah.
Lights and cameras and sound and all this stuff that has to happen, and a lot of logistics when you're doing this type of stuff, and also stuff that has nothing to do with the filming part of how do we need the scenarios to go. How are we going to do this safely? And also another thing people don't realize is we don't know. We really don't know what our good guy is going to do.
We have absolutely no idea what they're going to do. We try to steer the scenarios. We try to steer the best course of action is always just to get away. I mean, disengage and call 911.
Right.
But that doesn't make great TV. And then what do you train to on that? So we have to do a certain amount of driving the scenarios. We have to steer them towards action. And unfortunately, and unless there's shooting and gunplay, it's a boring scenario as well.
Yes, I would say most of the movies out there that start off with someone kidnapped my kid, or I was abused and now I'm going to train up and get revenge, all of those movies would be super boring if the person was able to get away initially or was already trained up and had a gun and prepared to use it, and they just killed the bad guy in the first 5 minutes.
Right. There would be no story.
Yeah. So, yeah, we do have to kind of try to drive it and force them into a shoot scenario, although that's not always the answer in real life. In this, we're trying to drive it to that so we have a chance to make it interesting, do some training, that kind of thing.
Well, we have to drive it to the worst case scenario, because otherwise it's going to be boring. And driving it to the worst case scenario sometimes takes a lot of effort, just in the way that we place people. We have to close avenues of escape. We have to give no other option.
Right.
And when things look like they're going really, really good, we have to throw a monkey wrench into it in order to liven it up. And it's, you know, we get critiqued on that, and you know it. You know, people will beat us up and they'll say, well, that will never happen. Well, you know, life is stranger than fiction.
Oh, for sure.
So those things happen. And, you know, everything we do is based on something that has happened.
Yeah.
It's just that we have to put a spin on it to choreograph it in the location where we're working.
Even the weird stuff. And we've done some episodes where, I mean, the one that comes to mind that I always tell people, we wouldn't have done this scenario unless it had actually had happened in real life, because it was absurd and also horrible. And it was the good guy comes upon someone trying to set their loved one on fire.
Which I was part of that one. I was there.
You remember that?
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, that was, you know, it's one of those, and there's a handful that still give me chills when I think about them, because it just creeps me out, or they're sad or whatever it is, because it played out well enough. And basically that one was based on a real story. It was actually a little bit of a tweak, because I believe it was a police officer showed up to a domestic disturbance call, and a boyfriend or husband was pouring gasoline on the wife or girlfriend about to set her on fire. And it was actually, I want to say it was a Crimson Trace story, where he put the dot on the guy and he stopped. He was like, whoa. And it's weird observations. So stuff you learn from being in Force and Force, and specific to First Person Defender. The first time I met you, I think, was when you and Michelle came down to be on the show as
season one.
As good
we
guys.
We came as representatives of Crimson Trace.
Yeah.
And that's how it all started.
Yeah. I remember, and it might have been one that you were in that weird little mildew-filled shoot house that we were in.
Yeah, they were
horrible.
Some kind of mud huts. Like
it was
a like a, what do they call that? Like a Quonset hut type of thing? Like an ammo storage.
On a National Guard base. But we were doing and it was a shoot house. They had outfitted this Quonset hut thing in to be a shoot house. And I remember being a bad guy. And I remember, I think we had you with an AR with a laser on it. And I remember seeing the laser down the hallway, and I could see it hitting my chest. And I remember having the genuine reaction of, well, that's it. It's over. And I thought, this wasn't me acting as the bad guy or acting to do something in favor of Crimson Trace or lasers or anything like that. It was just a genuine, like, well, I'm screwed.
I remember that scenario specifically, because that was like the first time that under stress I had ever transitioned the gun to my weak side and used my weak eye. Because every time I tried to lean out around cover to shoot, I was using my strong side, my right eye, my strong eye, and more of my head and gun were coming out, and it was tick, 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 tick. You guys kept shooting at me.
Right.
And I thought, what the heck am I going to do every time I stick my head around the corner, they shoot? And I thought, you know, I'm going to switch hands. So I switched hands, I switched sides, and I came out, and I believe it was just one shot, and it was like over.
Yeah. put the gun on your left shoulder. And I think, and I don't think it was intentional, but the laser had something to do with that too, right?
Because you're like, sure.
Oh, now, I mean, yeah, you can absolutely shoot from your opposite shoulder with your opposite eye, but
it was dark in there. I remember it was kind of dark, so it was perfect for using lasers.
Yeah.
And, you know, that became that was the beginning of my relationship with First Person Defender, and we're in our 8th season now.
Yeah. So we've got episodes launching here just in a week or two. I know that ones we shot this week will be out there. Are there any scenarios over the course of the years that we've done, any episodes that come to mind that were either interesting or stood out to you?
You know what? None of them. They all stand out to me. And the thing is, they happen fast. Mm-hmm. If a gun's not ready at hand, you're caught way off guard. Mm-hmm. Those things stand out to me, how fast it happens. And they're all based on reality.
Yeah.
The problem is, you're not in your own house. You're wearing these masks. Everybody's wearing a mask. So everybody looks dangerous. Everybody looks mysterious. It's so hard to act natural.
Yeah.
you know, what stands out to me about it is the same thing that stands out to other people that watch it. And, you know, they look at it and they think, well, this would never happen, or that's very unrealistic.
Right.
Well, yeah, a lot of it is very unrealistic, but the premise is very real.
Yeah, it's based on real stuff. And really, honestly, over the years, what we, and especially initially in the first several seasons, what we tried to do, because when you're starting with a blank sheet of paper on this, we went, okay, what are the things, whether it's valid or not, what are the things that people are most afraid of? What, and so you're going, ATMs, parking garage, a knife attack.
Darkness.
Someone breaking into my house. Darkness. Yes. And if you can tackle that stuff, whether it's real or not, is a real threat, because like being scared of the dark is dumb. Attacks happen in the daytime all the time. But we can all relate to it. We all go, yeah, that makes me nervous.
Well, everything's more mysterious in the dark. I mean, police work is more mysterious in the dark. You know, it scares a lot of people. And honestly, you know, we don't get too much bad feedback on First Person Defender. If the people that do have criticisms of it were to come and watch how it goes down, how we do things, how we really try to make it as realistic as possible.
As possible, right? That's the comments that make me laugh is when someone goes, and it's usually on YouTube, that's where we've got 20 or 30 million views of this show is where it started out. And now we've got it on our Roku channel, Apple TV, Amazon Fire, GunTalkTV.com. We put it everywhere we can. But especially YouTube, because it's just optimized for comments and that kind of thing. They go, wait a minute, why do they all have masks on?
Oh,
you go,
my God.
Because we're shooting real projectiles. We can't have people getting hurt. Wait a minute, I thought I was going to see somebody get shot. This isn't real. Well, you're like, what? It's a show. Yeah, we're doing training. We can't actually shoot people with guns.
They don't realize the precautions that we have to go through,
yeah.
Which does take away some of the realism. You know, we've gotten to where we're using Umarex, you know, marking guns and
rubber
ball
guns. Yeah, the T4E stuff.
Their T4E stuff is absolutely amazing. It's accurate. It's hard hitting.
And the guns run like a real gun, as close as you can to a real gun.
They look real, they feel real, they run real. They're lower in capacity, so people aren't quite as, you know, spraying. I would use airsoft in training, and you could put 20-some BBs in an airsoft gun, and people would just be a click, 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 click. As fast as they could
it's
possibly
shoot. It's like movie guns. It never runs out of ammo.
But you tell them, hey, listen, you know, you got 8 rounds in this, and here's a spare mag in case you, mm-hmm. if you make it to a reload.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, people are shooting a little bit less. They're shooting a little bit more conservatively. They're aiming. They're trying. They're worried about collateral damage because these things will, they dimple the drywall. You know, they could break certain things.
Yeah,
and you know, so we have some precautions. We cover face. Everything else is fair game. I mean, it's fair game. There's pain penalty. If there's not a pain penalty in force-on-force training, then we might as well just be using laser guns and clicking it off at each other.
We've seen that before where maybe it's an angle, but sometimes people, we've learned this lesson. They put on lots of clothes because they're worried about it hurting. But the problem is then they don't even know that they've been shot. And also something that we probably don't talk about much on the show, but we tell all of our good guys, all our contestants that come through, talk about good guys don't die.
Well, you know, and you have to remind people that too, because the good guy doesn't die. I don't care where you get shot at and how many times you get shot at. Most of the people, if they're really into it, they won't even realize they've been hit. Mm-hmm. And that's with minimal padding because the adrenaline's so high. Yeah. And that's very realistic in real world. A lot of people don't know they've been hit. You know, after a gunfight, you're supposed to check yourself over to make sure yep. that you're not leaking.
So the reason we do that, we tell them, look, if you get shot, you keep going.
Yes, you always finish the situation. You
because for a good guy, we don't want to start training, well, if you feel a hit, go down.
No, and we used to do that back in the old days. If you're hit, you're down. If you get hit. And then we realized we were killing our own people.
Yeah, we're training them to lay down when they get hit.
Training them to die. We were training them to take themselves out of the fight. And, when you're using paint marking cartridges and you take one squarely in the face shield, it is really hard to carry on because that sets you back just for a second because you think, wow, that was a bad one.
Yeah, I just got shot.
But
in the
then
head.
You press on. Doesn't matter. You yeah. still press on because yeah. this is training and training. Nobody, the good guys don't die. The scenarios always get ended. Nobody loses.
Right. You know? And when we call end exercise and we evaluate it, we'll let you know that, yeah, you actually got killed and you didn't. It didn't go well for you.
Yeah, you took some bad hits there. We could do better. You know, yeah. let's think about using cover. Let's think about using some distance. Let's think about some good solid marksmanship skills. You know, marksmanship seems to go right out the window. Everybody wants to do advanced training. And you know, we talk about it this season, you know, this chest and chin level shooting, the gun mm-hmm. just gets thrown out in front of them because their eyes are so full of the threat. And I tell people all the time, you know, anything less than sighted aimed fire is a compromise. Yeah. And if the bad guy's not stopping, if the bad guy's still aggressing you and you're lucky enough to have survived that initial lethal force, that initial spontaneous lethal force encounter, mm-hmm. do you have what it takes to end it? And that's, you know, it's probably not going to be crouch more, point harder, shoot faster. It's going to be sights on target, press trigger. Right. That's what it comes down to.
Well, you think about, that's the way it is. For most of us, we haven't been law enforcement, we haven't been military, but it's almost you have to ignore the fact that you're getting attacked or ignore the fact that someone's shooting at you and because you need to put your focus on stopping it. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's 100% right. You cannot be so caught up in the fact that you're trying. It's like anything else. It's like shooting a plate rack. How do you shoot a plate rack? Well, there's six plates. Mm-hmm. And what do most people do? They walk up there and they want all six plates down now. Mm-hmm. When in reality, it's I have to shoot one plate.
Six individual
six times.
Shots.
I have to shoot six individual shots.
Yeah.
I've got to put sights on target, fire. Sights on target, fire. Mm-hmm. I've got to know what I saw, what I felt, so that I can move on to the next one with a clear conscience. Because mm-hmm. as soon as you miss one, you know that one you just missed is sucking you back, and you're going, oh, geez, mm-hmm. you know. And then your chi is gone.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, a lot of people don't realize how much mental discipline goes into shooting. Mental discipline is putting those sights on target, working that trigger while it's there. I ask people all the time, what did you see? What did you feel? Feel a good trigger press. See a good sight picture. See, you know, if you can, see the muzzle flash, and a lot of times you can. Mm-hmm. I mean, see that, most people say, well, see that sight lift off the target. I see a good solid picture when the gun goes off. And when I don't, I have no idea where the bullet went.
Right, which is a problem, right. That's another thing. I love the debrief when we do first person defender. I love asking the questions to our good guys who just went through a self-defense encounter, especially if they took it seriously, they put themselves in that scenario, they didn't game it, they didn't pretend it's a game, and they're really in it, right? This mm-hmm. is really my wife, this is really my house that I'm in. And then you start asking them questions. What did you see? What did you hear? Why did you shoot that person? And it's interesting because a lot of times their answers aren't real good.
No.
They don't have a good answer.
A lot of times they can't answer some of the most basic questions, and that's just another good reason not to make any formal written statements. You know, of course you have to help law enforcement in their initial investigation. You say, yeah, I'm me, and that's a bad guy, and I was here, and he mm-hmm. came at me from over there. He pulled out a gun, and I fired, and, you know, he went down. That's when I called law enforcement. How many times you shoot? Listen, I don't know. That's kind of stuff you can't answer.
Yeah.
How many times? What does it matter?
You know what's funny is, I know it's a show, but we've asked a lot of people that question. How many shots did you fire? And I don't think I've ever heard on our show them say, I don't know, or I'd rather not say.
Yeah.
Now, we're the host of the show. We're not interrogating them, but they have that option to go, I don't know.
Yeah. You know, and that's a great answer. There's absolutely nothing wrong with saying anything like that. there was something else that I wanted to say about the show. We were talking about it, but carry on.
Well, there was something else. You were talking about the capacity of the magazines. I see two sides, okay? I see our good guys dump a magazine so quickly that you go, whew, lesson. I think I want more bullets in the gun.
Right.
And then I also see the exact opposite, where you have someone shoot a single shot, and they assume, single shot, I'm pretty sure I hit the bad guy, it must be over.
Yeah, it worked. Yeah, we don't know when it works, and we saw that this week. You know, we had mm-hmm. we had the bad guy get shot, and he kind of stumbles around, because bad guys are also coached. You know, the bad guys will not go down if they're not hit solidly. If they're not mm-hmm. feeling good center mass hits, they're not going to go down. If they're getting just, you know, hits in the arms or superficial hits, mm-hmm. glancing blows, they're going to keep fighting.
Right.
And if you're coming off that gun because you're a one shot and I want to see how I did type of person, you're going to be way behind the power curve, because the bad guy is just starting to gain momentum.
Other lessons that I've learned in doing all these shows, and I think by the end of this season, we'll probably be past 80 episodes of First
Really?
Person Defender over 8 seasons. And people want, and you mentioned something, and I'll let you, which you were talking about yesterday, but people being too nice, letting people get too close. Even in this, we tell them to we ask them not to game it.
Yeah.
Act how you would normally act.
Be you.
And sometimes that's a challenge. People will act very sketchy and suspicious of everyone around them, when you wouldn't really do that if you were walking through a store or you're getting gas or whatever. But at the same time, you're in this scenario, you know this is a self-defense show, and they'll still let me walk up and stab them, get close enough to stab them, as the bad guy, as a pretend bad guy.
You know, I'm a nice person. I want to be nice to people, but I size them up whenever anybody approaches me.
Mm-hmm.
In this type of situation, if somebody's approaching me in a mask and they're all padded up, I'm skeptical of that. So that's going to be part of my normal everyday thing. I'm going to mm-hmm. be skeptical, like, hey, well, just stay right there. Tell me what it is you want. Or, hey, not today. Just look at them. Not today, buddy. You don't have the right guy here. Go find somebody else.
Yeah.
So that would normally take care of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
But in First Person Defender, we can't just let it go at that.
No, we have to have a show. Well, so yesterday you were talking to our group of role players about one of your takeaways from the show about the gun being on you.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, one of the biggest takeaways I've gotten over the years from the show is if you don't have a gun on you when you need it, it's probably not close enough. Now, I'm not saying staged close by. Like, when I don't sleep with a gun on me, but I have a gun next to my bed. I don't have to get out of my bed to get it.
Right.
I don't have to go to another location. I don't
right.
have to open a box. I don't have to do anything. I got a gun right there. When I'm sitting watching TV, if I don't have a gun on and it's now put away on the stand where I keep several guns, where, you know, because you carry different guns every day.
Mm-hmm.
So there's times when I feel like, damn, that's just too far away. And I'll put it over and I'll put it on the lamp table next to me. Just because, you know, when I'm working in the yard, I've got all kinds of guns in my house.
Yeah.
But I've handled calls when people have been in the yard and somebody that's tripped out on meth comes up and starts a commotion. And sometimes, you know, it's a stabbing, a fight, So, you know, I
the gun kinda, on you.
I kind of like walk
if it's not on you, you don't really have the gun.
Yeah.
If it's not within arm's reach.
I tell you what, I get fuel when I travel. Driving in the car, I take my gun off sometimes. I'll put it in the center console. I'll just set it there because I can reach it. I can deal with it there. But if I stop for gas, that sucker goes right back in the holster.
Yeah.
Right back in the holster before I even step out. It's lunging distance.
Right.
In law enforcement, that's called the lunge area.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how you can, that area can be searched because if I'm getting arrested, they can search that. That's a lunging area.
Interesting. Okay.
And it's still not close enough for me.
Right. So, new episodes coming up. If you haven't seen the show, you got to go watch. We've got 70 or so episodes out there right now. You can find it on YouTube, the Gun Talk Facebook page. You can find it on GunTalkTV.com and our Roku app, our Apple TV app. I think Android TV. We try to be everywhere. But check that out, and then we've got new episodes coming up. So one way you can find out about this stuff is to be notified. Subscribe to our Gun Talk YouTube channel. Follow us on Facebook. You ring the bell, you sign up for notifications, all that stuff that you do on socials. But yeah, just wanted to give you guys a little bit of a behind-the-scenes inside scoop of what we're doing here. Chris, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm here. Well, let's see how it turns out.
We never know.
We don't.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.